The president wants to spy on 200 million Americans without a warrant. Has he read this document, which he was sworn to uphold?
Now, I will not have you libel Abraham Lincoln.
I don't understand the problem with registering guns. We register cars.
Mark Levine brings you the news the government doesn't want you to know.
Today, an explosive story about connections between white supremacists and Islamic terrorists.
When there's a conflict between Scalia's conservative values and the Constitution of the United States, he throws away the Constitution.
When we do have secret prisons, that is not what America's all about.
Let's go to Mark in 5, 4, 3, 2.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. It's been called the equivalent of a nuclear bomb dropped in America. I'm talking about mountaintop removal, the way that coal companies get about 5% of the coal that they use in America. They literally blow the top off of mountains. They have destroyed 500 mountains to date using equivalent explosives to the ones Timothy McVeigh used to bomb the federal building in Oklahoma City. They have now destroyed acreage the size of Delaware, more than 1 million acres, and defiled 1,200 miles of streams. How is this allowed? How did this happen? Do we really need this coal for energy? What is the damage to the air, to the water, and to the West Virginia communities where this stuff is occurring? To answer these questions, I've invited my guest. His name is Bob Kincaid. Listeners to the Head On Radio Network know him well. He is the host of the Bob Kincaid Show on the Head On Radio Network. But what you may or may not know is that Bob is also the president of the board of directors of Coal River Mountain Watch. Bob, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Thank you very much, Mark. Pleased to be here.
I'm very glad that you're here. I'll tell you, I was just in Harpers Ferry, West Virginia, in your state, just the tip of your state, closest to Washington, D.C.
A little bit.
On last Friday, we drove in from Maryland, and everything's very flat, and then you cross the Potomac, and suddenly the mountains are there. Beautiful mountains. The Appalachians were there. And I remember thinking, wow, are these beautiful mountains the exact ones that are being destroyed?
They are the same ones. You're just in a different part of West Virginia. The vast majority of mountaintop removal takes place in southern West Virginia, the southern West Virginia coal fields, counties like Raleigh, Boone, Lincoln, Mingo, Logan, McDowell. And that is a very different West Virginia from the West Virginia you saw, Mark.
Well, now, it's been described as a moonscape. Literally, now, I saw beautiful, majestic mountains up in the mist with trees and rolling hills and really beautiful countryside. It's now a moonscape down there?
Yes, it is. And it takes up hundreds and even thousands of acres. Literally, nothing can live. The water table is gone. The trees are gone. The topsoil is gone. There's nothing there that resembles those mountains anymore. It is a dead place that will always be dead. The coal industry likes to say that they reclaim these sites, but in fact, what they do is they take the detritus that's left over after the devastation. They try to contour it to one degree or another, and then they throw non-native grasses on it. So no tree will ever grow. No crop will ever be sown or farmed or harvested there. It is a dead place for literally thousands upon thousands of coming years.
Back up for me, Bob. Tell me what the mountains were like and why it is the coal companies want to use this particular type of mining, because after all, coal mining has been around in this country for more than 100 years now. Why this kind of mountaintop bombing, if you will, and exactly how does it work? What are they doing in those mountains?
It is bombing, Mark, and frankly, it's criminal. If the law was enforced, people would go to jail for what's going on right now.
Al Gore called it criminal, in fact.
And so has Robert F. Kennedy Jr. What they do is, back in the 80s, there were in excess of 100,000 coal miners in West Virginia, Mark. With the advent of this process, It makes it possible for the coal companies to employ far less individuals, employ far fewer coal miners. They don't have to go underground. Instead, they use a demolition team and massive, truly massive pieces of machinery that literally scrape and drag the mountain away after it's been blown to smithereens and dump it over in a valley and then take we're talking about the tiny seams of coal that they'll go after. And they do that because it is cheaper for them. It is not cheaper for the community. It's not cheaper for for anyone except the coal companies themselves.
I actually happen to have a picture here, which I'd like to show folks. It's a little small. I'm going to try to blow it up here, and we can show it behind us. This is a picture of the mountains after, and I want to thank Blue Commonwealth Blog. This is after the mountaintop removal is finished. And you can see, let's show that up on the screen if we could, you can see that the mountains are flat. There's nothing left.
It's not a mountain anymore.
No, it's like a rocky plateau, maybe something you'd see out west. These were once the rolling, beautiful Appalachian Mountains of West Virginia.
Those were once the oldest mountains on Earth, Mark. Those were mountains that once upon a time, millions of years ago, were as high as the Himalayas are now.
You know, Robert Kennedy talks about the fact that these were the oldest mountains on Earth. Let me play a little bit of what he had to say.
We're seeing some of the most damaging efforts of all to take down the final safeguards, the environment and public health that have been erected by Congress and Republican and Democrats in Congress and the White House over the past 30 years. I've filed very detailed testimony about some of the worst of these actions, but I just want to, you know, give you a real life expression of what's going on. I flew over only a few weeks ago over the Appalachian Mountains, over eastern Kentucky and West Virginia, mainly over the Cumberland Plateau. If the American people could see what I saw on that trip, there would be a revolution in this country. We are literally cutting down the Appalachian Mountains, these historic landscapes where Daniel Boone and Davy Crockett roamed. The Appalachians, chairman, were a refuge during the Pleistocene Ice Age 12,000 years ago, when where I live and where Congressman Hall, the district that he represents, was under 2 miles of ice at that time. And the rest of North America turned into a tundra where there was no forest. And the last refuge for those forests was the Appalachian Mountains. And when the tundras withdrew, when the glaciers withdrew, all of North America was reseeded from the seed stock in those forests. So it's the mother forest of all of North America. And that's why it's the most diverse and abundant temperate forest in the world, because it's the longest living. And today, these mining companies, with the help of their indentured servants in the White House, are doing what the glaciers couldn't accomplish, what the Pleistocene Ice Age couldn't accomplish, which is to flatten the Appalachian Mountains and destroy those forests. They're using these giant machines called drag lines, which are 22 stories high. I flew under one of them in a Piper Cub. They cost $500 million, and they practically dispense with the need for human labor.
Let me stop him right there and ask you to comment on what you just heard. That's Robert F. Kennedy Jr., of course,
yes.
The son of the famous Robert Kennedy.
Everything he says is the absolute 100% honest gospel truth. Let me give you an idea of scale, if I could, Mark. There are mountaintop removal operations, for instance, like the one you just saw. They're in Kentucky. They're in southwestern Virginia. They're in West Virginia. They're in East Tennessee. There are mountaintop removal sites, Mark, where you could set the entirety of the United States Capitol, the whole building, and there would be square miles of desolation around it still. That's the size and the scope, and it's really hard to get your mind around unless you've actually seen it.
I guess you have to fly over it like Robert Kennedy did, really, to see it.
That's beneficial, or to be on the ground where you can go and see it. Of course, the coal companies do their dead level best to make sure that nobody can see it, at least until recently. Now the genie's sort of out of the bottle as a result of some recent developments, and they're so brazen that they're even letting it be seen from the road. They're doing mountaintop removal in probably the single most visited tourism area of West Virginia.
Really?
Yeah.
Because they're not afraid of the political consequences?
There's no one to stop them.
Well, we're going to talk in detail about the history of the law behind this and the political consequences, everything through George Bush and Barack Obama throughout this hour. I also want to make sure that our listeners have the phone number if they want to join in, if you have a comment on mountaintop removal. Again, even if you support it, I want to hear from you, any side. The toll-free number is 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. We'd like to hear from you, whatever your views are on this issue. Bob, I want to get some idea of the scope of the devastation, because it's more than even just West Virginia. There are streams and a lot of the headwaters. I mean, I live next to the Potomac River. The Potomac River's headwaters are in West Virginia.
Yes.
And then up there in Pennsylvania. So if they do damage up in the mountains, how does that affect those of us downstream?
We're all downstream, Mark, and we're all downwind. If you bury the streams in Appalachia, Appalachia's headwater streams feed the entire watershed of the eastern United States. Just by example, tiny little streams in the hollers of the Appalachians in West Virginia feed into the Big and Little Coal River. They feed into the Gauley River. They feed into the New River. All of those feed into the New and the Gauley form the Kanawha. The Little Coal and the Big Coal go into the Kanawha River. The Kanawha feeds the Ohio, on downstream.
Ohio all the way down the Mississippi River, then.
Right. And what's being dumped into the water as a result of all of this are heavy metals that are irremediable at this point. Selenium, barium, arsenic,
and
mercury.
These metals are inside the mountain?
Coal is one of the most toxic substances, it's a toxic substance and it's near toxic substances. For instance, near where I live, there is a layer of selenium near the coal that they're blasting the mountain away to get. That is toxic at a level of absolute profundity. The toxic coal sludge that they use to prepare this to prepare the coal for market has toxins in it that the EPA says are tolerable only in parts per billion and exist in the liquids in parts per million or parts per thousand.
So 1,000 or 1,000,000 times the safe recommended levels.
Yes.
Now, I think most Americans have heard of arsenic is very dangerous. Certainly, it's a well-known poison. Mercury, I think we've been taught, is very dangerous. Most of us probably haven't heard of selenium. What is selenium?
Selenium is another heavy metal.
Just like arsenic or...
Sure. And it exists. It exists as a in coal beds or adjacent to coal beds. And it's very hard to control. It's impossible to clean up. And once it gets out, it's out.
And how does it get out and dumped into the streams? Don't the coal companies make sure that these heavy metals are not thrown in our riverbeds?
Yeah, they're supposed to, but there's a nudge and a nod and a wink. And I was recently told by the Department of Environmental Protection that they would find all the selenium from the mountain they're blowing up. They would find all the selenium, Mark, and they'd put it in a tidy little pile.
Wait, they blow up the mountain with an explosive? And they're going to somehow collect all the selenium that rains down from the heavens?
Absolutely. Not an atom will escape their notice. And this is the fun part. Now, these are the Appalachians. This is, of course, as you note, it's a temperate rainforest, okay? We were told by the Department of Environmental Protection, Mark Levine, that they were going to collect all the selenium and they were going to put it on a dry part of the mountain.
Yeah, the desert part of the temperate rainforest.
Right, right, exactly. Yeah, the dry part. The one that's under the geodesic dome. Yeah, right. Sure.
Yeah. So they're required to do this. Obviously, they're not doing this. What are the consequences?
Well, but they're required to, but they're not required to. What happens is if they get caught poisoning something, for instance, a little trout stream near where I live was a reproducing trout stream. Anglers out there will know that these are very important. These are the kind of trout streams that the DNR truck doesn't have to go and dump trout in every January.
Right, right. These are real trout.
Yeah, these are native trout, right. Reproducing stream. We had one of those near where I live. We don't have it anymore. It was killed by coal mining. So no more trout.
We have to take a break, Bob.
Sure.
But when we come back, I want to go through the whole history of the law here.
Yep.
You and I both have a background in the law. Let's go through how the law changed, why this was allowed in the first place, when did it start, go through the whole history, and also what folks can do now. If you want to call in and add your 2 cents, again, I don't care what your opinion is. I'd like to hear from you. Toll free, 888-488-MARK. 888-488-6275. I'll be right back with Bob Kincaid talking about mountaintop removal throughout Appalachia, turning these mountains into moonscapes. How it happened, why it happened, stay tuned. We'll be right back after this.
Art, a universal language.
And
an expression of culture.
How it happened, why it happened.
Of self.
Why, how it happened, why it happened.
And now,
stop,
thanks
right.
to empowered
right.
women
so
international.
I think next we go through the history.
A way for emerging and established immigrant and refugee artists and artisans to find hope to earn a living while enriching the lives of all of us. Empowered Women International. Making a better America every day. For more information on Empowered Women International's educational programs or to make a tax-free donation, contact cfripp@aol.com.
You'd think it would be easy to tell which kids have trouble with their eyesight. But that's not always the case. Even though one in four children may have a vision problem, eye doctors tell us the symptoms aren't always so obvious. We do know that 80% of all childhood learning is visual. And without good vision, kids can have trouble learning to read and may fall behind in school. For clues on how to spot the real-life signs of childhood vision problems and what parents can do, visit checkyearly.com. A public service message from the Vision Council of America and Reading is Fundamental.
Here again, the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. We're talking about mountaintop removal, which is, might be a nice way to talk about the bombing, the explosion, the destruction of mountains throughout the Appalachians. Of course, it's not on the oldest mountain chain in the United States, but one of the oldest mountain chains on the planet. Here is a picture. Let's show the picture again of mountaintops after they have been destroyed. My guest, Bob Kincaid, is the president of Coal River Mountain Watch. Bob, tell us, you told me you know where these mountains are.
Yeah, that's Cayford Mountain, Mark. That used to be one of the most magnificent mountains in southern West Virginia. It was...
Let's show it up if we can, please. Go ahead, Bob.
Well, it was like, they're like emeralds. They're lush and they're beautiful to walk on them, to hike in them, to hunt ginseng in them, to hunt fish. It's a completely sustainable ecosystem, and once they get done with it, it's a dead thing.
While we're looking at the clip of the mountains, I'd like to listen to Al Gore on the subject. So we'll play Al Gore, but I'd like to show the clip of the mountains.
My wife Tipper and I give out an award at the Nashville Film Festival every year for best documentary on these environmental issues, and this year's winner was called Mountaintop Mining, and I learned more about it from that movie. What they do is, you all know, they just chop off the, and then they dump the detritus, the rock, and the dirt into the creeks, and it just poisons the whole ecosystem. It is part and parcel of the same dysfunctional energy system that is causing global warming. It is also facilitated by the same moral blindness to the consequences of what we're doing. And by the way, it's all done in an automated way. That's why the coal miners lost all their jobs. And when we make this transition to renewable fuels, we have to keep them in mind. We ought to guarantee a good job in the fresh air and sunshine for every single coal miner who has been affected by the transition over to renewable fuels.
Bob, let me ask you about Al Gore on this issue. Has he been pretty good on it, or is he kind of a latecomer?
I wouldn't call him a latecomer. I think he's been there are so many issues related to climate change that it's unfair to say something like that. But he's got everything he says there is spot on.
Well, let's go through the history of this because it is a bit complex, and I think a lot of people don't understand why it's an issue now. We've been mining coal for what, more than 100 years, right?
The first coal I think was found in mined in the Coal River Valley. In the 1840s.
1840s, maybe 150 years.
Where I live, they started getting at it in the 1880s.
And how did they, at that time, they dug these deep holes and caves and went
in there? Yeah, you tunneled in either horizontally or you went in and you eventually the shaft type mining. And it's like creating a series of honeycombs within the earth. My great-grandfather, my grandfather, my father, all were underground coal miners. I suppose just by the grace of God that I'm not.
And that's a dirty and dangerous job in and of itself.
Yes, it is. People have, thousands have lost their lives over the course of the years. Terrible, and it wasn't that long ago. You recall the Sago mining disaster. There are There are inherent dangers to going underground, but those are dangers that are borne by the people who choose to do so. I'm not trying to be brutal about it, but anyone who goes underground to mine coal knows about and is taught about and is trained about the risks that attend upon it. Mountaintop removal endangers everyone anywhere near it.
You don't have to be a coal miner.
Right. You don't have to opt into it. A very dear friend of mine says, we don't live where they mine coal. They mine coal where we live. My family's been on been in the area where we live 6, 7, 8, 9 generations. And we were here before the coal industry was, but we don't have the clout that they have.
And your house literally shakes when
sure.
they do these explosions?
All through the region where they do this. It's nothing to have your houses shake. It's nothing to have your houses covered in silica rock dust that rains down from the blasting. It's nothing to have your foundation cracked. It is nothing to have your well destroyed, or if your water well still has water in it as a result of sludge injection and seepage and aquifer poisoning. It's nothing to open your tap and see something that's vile and orange running out. That's even, not only can you not drink it, you can't let it touch your skin.
Well, surely someone has filed a lawsuit against the coal companies for the damage to their home.
Not so much.
Why
some,
not?
I mean, there has been some, but not a lot. Because it's West Virginia, Mark.
You coal can't afford to fight.
We don't call it King Coal for nothing. It is sovereign.
So what happens if you were to file a lawsuit against the coal companies?
Hopefully you would get justice. I wouldn't bet on it. On the other hand, however, you might be subjected to harassment from people who work in the coal industry. Just as an example, about a year ago this time, some folks went up on a mountain or at the foot of the mountain where a mountaintop removal job was going on. And we had a blessing of the mountain, an outdoor church service. In the middle of this outdoor church service, employees of the coal company came down and got in the face of the priest and began screaming at him while he was offering up a prayer.
Were they on the coal mountain people's territory, or
it was just at the foot of the road going up onto the mountain? But no, it wasn't an issue of trespass. It was an issue of us having the temerity to criticize the destruction of our community.
Let me go through the history of this and the law on this, because my understanding is that most of this is against the original Clean Water Act.
If the
right?
Clean Water Act was fully enforced, this would all be illegal. It couldn't happen.
Why is that? What's in the Clean Water Act? When did that come from? What's that history?
The Clean Water Act is fairly simple in its application. It says you cannot dump waste into streams.
And that dates back to the early 70s, to Richard Nixon and the EPA.
I'm not sure of the exact passage date, but it's been
more than 30 years or so. It just says you can't dump waste in
streams. Mark Levine can't take his household garbage and go dump it in a stream.
Makes sense.
Exactly. And neither can a coal company take all this toxic poison that is associated with this blasting and go and dump it in a stream. But that all changed.
Okay, and we're going to get to that. The next thing that happened in the scheme of things is in 1977, there's something called SMCRA. What's SMCRA?
Surface Mine Control Reclamation Act.
And what was that all about?
That was supposed to be a law that would speak to the need to reclaim surface mine sites and not have the coal companies do what they are very notorious for doing, and that is making a terrible mess and then bugging out never to be found again and leaving the state and the people of the state to clean up the mess.
So you got
to
put the mountain back. You remove the mountain. It's like your mom says. You take your stuff out, you put it back. You remove the mountain, you put it back, and there's even something called return to contour.
But all
it's supposed to make it as good as it was originally.
But that's all a fraud, Mark. Only God can make a mountain.
You can't put it back.
No, you can sit there and you can stair step it and spray some non-native grass and say, look, we've reclaimed it. And hope that some scrub brush will grow on it and say, see, it's a mountain again. Anybody with two eyes in their head can look at it and see that that's not a mountain anymore. It's something, but it's not a mountain.
In other words, it's man-made. It's not God-made.
Well, yes, and it's not a mountain. It's a hill of rubble. You can at a distance, it looks like it's growing grass, but even at Cayford Mountain, for instance, there are areas that are so-called reclaimed there. if you get near to some of those areas that the coal company claims to have reclaimed, you look at the grass, you see the grass, but if you look closely at all, you'll see it's all white boulders underneath it. I mean, there are strains of grass that'll, if we sprayed you, it would grow on. Okay, it's like chia or something.
Right, right. But it's not native to the region. Now, right. In 1982, under Ronald Reagan, of all people, obviously a very conservative president, he developed, I guess by executive order, a stream buffer zone. What's mm-hmm. that?
That says that you can't do these kind of activities within a certain.
It's 100 feet.
100 feet of a stream.
So you can. If you're going to blow up a mountain or do strip mining, I guess...
Yeah, don't do it within 100 feet of a stream.
Don't do it within 100 feet of the stream. Well, there's streams throughout West Virginia.
Right. I think we covered that.
I think we did. Yeah. So, but at least in 1982, they weren't blowing up mountains.
They were doing different kinds of strip mining, but it wasn't...
But it wasn't the kind of explosions that we're talking about.
Right,
it wasn't the bombing.
Yeah, this is strip mining on steroids.
And that started really, I think, with the 2002 Bush decision, right?
It was ramping up through the late 90s, but it really got the bit in its teeth in 2002 with this it wasn't a decision, Mark. Remember, like so many things that the Bush administration did to us, they took something that was completely comprehensible to look at, that made perfect sense. Anybody could read it and see what it meant.
Don't dump stuff in the streams.
And they clarified it.
And how did they clarify it?
Well, the Clean Water Act says don't dump waste in streams.
Okay.
Well, the Bush administration thought that we were, all of us and people living in coalfield communities, they thought that we were confused by that, Mark.
And waste wasn't waste.
Right. And so they clarified what that said by saying, well, wait a minute, heavy metals and toxins that are poisonous in parts per billion, those aren't really waste.
Arsenic isn't waste. Selenium isn't waste. Mercury isn't waste.
Not waste. It's fill.
It's fill. It's poisonous fill.
No, it's fill.
It's just fill.
It's just fill.
Oh, it's just not waste.
There it went over the valley.
So he undid the Ronald Reagan idea that you can't do this within 100 feet of a stream. You can just do it anywhere, I guess.
Just push it over.
So it was the Bush decision in 2002 that set the coal companies on steroids.
That really got things going nicely.
So that's when the real mighty explosion started, and the stuff that Timothy McVeigh used, those explosive devices that apparently I'm told have larger in total than the Vietnam War or Hiroshima.
West Virginia gets the equivalent of a Hiroshima used on it about every 9 days.
Hiroshima every 9 days. Hiroshima every 9 days. That should just be your slogan, it seems to me. Hiroshima every 9 days. That says it all. Folks, if you want to call in, you know the number, 888-488-MARK. 888-488-6275. We'll be right back after this. I think Hiroshima every 9 days.
Listen to smoke before you give it a try.
Only you.
Don't play with matches. Don't play with fire. Don't play with matches, don't play with fire. Yeah.
Only you can prevent wildfires.
Fire!
Why don't you just wash your car at home?
When I wash my car, everything runs down the street and down into the storm drains. With all the chemicals and the soaps and waxes, the last thing I want to do is poison my own drinking water.
At least here, it's all contained and recycled on site.
That's why I also take my car in for oil changes instead of doing it myself. I might take a chance on spilling stuff.
You know what the best part is?
What?
More time to kick back and watch the game.
How far would you go to protect the planet?
I want you to build an ark.
Here we go. Okay, that's good. Oh, okay. Ow! Oh, move!
Maybe there's another way.
People, the flood is imminent!
Is it too much to ask for a little precipitation?
Go to fightglobalwarming.com to find out what you and your community can do to reduce global warming pollution.
Somewhere around the world, there are men and women of the armed forces risking their lives, helping rebuild communities after natural disasters, collecting toys for needy children, tutoring kids in school, These are your sons and daughters who work to keep us safe, secure, and free. Dedicated men and women who put their country first.
Here again, the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Coal mining in West Virginia is more than 150 years old. And my guest today, Bob Kincaid, who's on the Head On Radio Network with me as a radio host, but is also president of the board of directors of Coal River Mountain Watch, will tell you that his father, his grandfather, his great-grandfather have been in the coal business. And, you know, Bob's not a fan of the coal business. We could talk about the fact that any kind of coal mining is dangerous and dirty and toxic to communities around. But ever since a Bush decision in 2002, redefining waste not to be waste, taking the Clean Water Act and saying, in essence, that toxic heavy metals are no longer toxic, they're no longer even waste, they're just fine with me, just fine with the government, the coal companies went on steroids. What did they do, Bob, after 2002 that they didn't do before?
They went wild. With the ability to do this and the 2002 clarification in hand, they began to get more and more permits to do more and more of this via a very, shall we say, obsequious, compliant Department of Environmental Protection in West Virginia.
It's the EPA that gives these permits.
No, it's the DEP. It's the West Virginia.
Oh, see, it's state.
Yeah, you mentioned SMACRA a little bit ago. SMACRA, the SMACRA legislation lets the federal government concede its oversight of these industries to the several states.
So basically the EPA says, hands off, that's West Virginia's problem.
Yeah, you do it.
Interesting. So and there's no federal oversight hardly at all?
Well, there is. I mean, there are federal permitting processes, but when it comes to the actual mine site permits, it goes through the Department of Environmental Protection in West Virginia.
I want to get to the politics of it a little bit later on the hour, but one of the things that I'm sure my listeners want to know, and we'll get there, I promise, is why West Virginians allow this to happen. We'll get to that in a second. Let me just finish the history, though. There was a big case in the Fourth Circuit in 2005. What was that case all about?
Well, we've been to the Fourth Circuit several times. We have had three separate decisions by three district judges in West Virginia. Interestingly, not all of them Democrats, not all of them Republicans, but all three of those district judges reaching the same conclusion, that mountaintop removal is a horror, an irremediable horror, and that it essentially constitutes a deliberate attack on not only the communities, or not only the mountains themselves, but the communities, and it can't be fixed.
You were telling me in the break that if that amount of explosion was used by Saddam Hussein, finish the sentence.
Oh yeah, if we had found out that Saddam Hussein was actually doing what's done to West Virginia to his own people, then there might have been some sense when George W. Bush stood up there and said he bombs his own people, because you know what?
They are bombing their own people.
We're bombing our own people.
So you have three district court judges, some Democrats, some Republicans, make very clear that, as Al Gore put it, it's an atrocity and a crime. Well, that sounds like a strong decision. The litigation system works. What happened?
Wrong. Well, what happened is the coal companies picked up their phone and they called their little silk stocking law firms and they appealed the decision to the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals in Richmond.
Which is one of the most conservative courts of appeals in the nation.
And that's being kind and generous. I have lots of other words I'd like to use.
Okay.
The Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals in Richmond said, oh no, this can't be. You can't, you can't do that to Big Coal. Big Coal owns West Virginia. And there's always been some wacky rationale. In one case, they cited the 11th Amendment. In this most recent decision that came down a few weeks ago.
The 11th Amendment, by the way, for people who don't know, says that you can't sue a state, basically, in federal court. But this isn't, they're not suing the state, they're suing the coal companies.
It also goes through state agencies, federal agencies, state agencies. In this most recent case, it involved the Army Corps of Engineers and their permitting process for valley fills, which was just insane. It really was. The Army Corps of Engineers argued that they didn't really have a means of rebuilding streams, but they were sure that that could be done.
They were sure it could be done, but they weren't doing it and didn't know how.
Right.
Okay.
But the latest crazy rationale was states' rights.
The right of West Virginia to destroy itself.
Right.
Okay.
I mean, it was the latest Fourth Circuit decision was literally an environmental version of Plessy.
Nice. Now, George Bush, apparently, just December 2008, just 3 months ago, 1 month before he left office, left you another present to make things worse.
Not for the coal companies. It's not. It was a little lovely parting gift from George W. Bush.
What was the parting gift from our ex-president George Bush?
That was the stream buffer zone rule. That said, you know, we talked about the 100 feet and everything.
Right. Ronald Reagan's rule. Yeah.
Goodbye.
So you can just destroy all the streams.
Yeah, but Mark Levine still can't put his garbage in the
creek.
Oh
no, I could put only arsenic that I got from coal in there, but I couldn't put some dirty wrappers or Coke cans. That would be bad.
No, that's waste.
That's waste. But toxic selenium and arsenic.
It really was. It was a parting thumb in the eye to people in West Virginia who want to live in the same communities they've been in for the last 8 generations.
Well, here's the question I think everybody's asking. All right, what is wrong with you folks in West Virginia? They are asking themselves, all right, we understand that environmentalists want to protect this area, but West Virginia, if it's destroying itself, blame the feds if you want, but isn't it also West Virginia's state government? Isn't it your own fault?
Sure.
For allowing these politicians, what's wrong? Why are West Virginians voting out the people who support the coal?
Well, see, in West Virginia, Mark, we have coalicans and coalocrats. All right. The rest of the nation has Republicans and Democrats. We have coalicans and coalocrats because that the coal's influence in West Virginia is that insidious. Now, that's not to say that we don't have some wonderful and dedicated public servants. We do, but they are largely drowned out by the constant drumbeat. There's an organization in West Virginia. It's one of those phony astroturf front groups that the coal industry's put up called the Friends of Coal. Can you imagine that
being a friend of coal?
Yes. Yeah. You're a friend of a
friend
mineral.
Of some dirty carbon substance.
Right. You're a friend of a hydrocarbon.
Yeah. That's kind of a weird friend. But the reason people support it, Bob, you know it, is people say it's jobs.
But it's not jobs.
Why not? Can I play Robert Kennedy?
Yeah,
on this
why don't you do that?
Let me play what Robert Kennedy had to say to answer that question.
He's much more eloquent than I.
Indeed, is the point. When my father was fighting strip mining in Appalachia back in the 1960s, I remember a conversation that I had with him when I was 14 years old, where he said to me, they're not just destroying the environment, they are permanently impoverishing these communities because there's no way that they will ever be able to regenerate an economy from these barren moonscapes that are left behind. And he said, they're doing it so they can break the unions. And that's exactly what happened. When he told me that there were 140,000 unionized mine workers in West Virginia digging coal out of tunnels in the ground. Today, there are fewer than 11,000 miners left in the state. A very few of them are unionized because the strip industry isn't. They're taking more coal out of West Virginia than they were in 1968. But at least the difference is, back then, at least some of that money was being left in the state for salaries and pensions and reinvestment in those communities. Today, virtually all of it is leaving the state and going straight up to Wall Street, to the big banking houses, to the corporate headquarters of Arch Coal, Massey Coal, and Peabody Coal, mainly Massey Coal, and then to the big banking houses like Bank of America and Morgan, which own these operations. 95% of the coal in West Virginia is owned by out-of-state interests.
So here's my question. All right. Robert Kennedy's quite persuasive there on how it's not helping local people in West Virginia.
Right.
But West Virginians vote. You still have, I think, some kind of democracy there, right? It's still a Republican government. Mm-hmm. Why don't West Virginians realize what you're saying, what Robert F. Kennedy is saying, and get rid of the coalicans and the coalocrats, whether it's, you know, Robert Byrd on one side or you have to give me the Republican on the other. But why aren't they throwing them out and protecting their communities?
Because it's 120 years, it's 130 years, 150 years, Mark. Just to give you an idea of what we're dealing with. If you come out, this is just anecdotal, and it's something that everybody knows. I'm not telling any secrets. The first time that John D. Rockefeller IV, J. Rockefeller, first time he ran for governor in West Virginia.
He's the current senator of West Virginia, Democrat.
Right, junior senator. The first time he ran for governor, he made a very strong statement against strip mining.
Really?
And he was soundly thrashed in that race. And he has never said an unkind word about strip mining since.
Is it the money that coal companies can give a lot of money to the other side?
Sure, it's money, it's influence, It is the constant drumbeat of jobs that terror, and this is not a good, the jobs argument terrifies any politician. Oh, they're going to love you. They're going to love you if you make sure they don't have a job. But the fact of the matter is, if coal brings such prosperity, you know, we see billboards in West Virginia that say coal keeps the lights on. We see billboards that say coal, clean, green, carbon neutral. Imagine that, carbon neutral, carbon, Mark. Wouldn't you just love to say that in Spanish? Because you can't.
It wouldn't make sense.
Right, you can't.
Right. Right.
We see all that stuff, but the fact of the matter is, go to the places that produce the most coal. Go to Mingo County. Go to Logan. Go to Boone.
What's the economy? It should be booming since you have so much coal.
It's poverty, nothing but poverty. They say, "Wow, you know, we're going to reclaim those things." You know what? We'll put a shopping center on top of that. But it turns out you can't do anything with the top of the mountaintop removal sites because it constantly shifts. They tried to build a prison on one in Kentucky, and it's still settling. And bless their hearts, the folks have a good sense of humor there. They called it Sink Sink.
Well, here's what I'm trying to understand. All right, I get it. Coal is some 50% of American electricity. It's not going away tomorrow. You ask any politician about coal, that's the first statistic they throw at you, Bob. 50% of American electricity, can't get rid of it tomorrow. I mean, I've heard you ask politicians this. Right. I've heard that response.
And it's true. It is what it is.
But can't you make a distinction between the way your father, your grandfather, your great-grandfather
heavens,
lived under the mountains
yes.
and the 5% that comes from these explosive mountain bombings?
You absolutely can. And the fact of the matter is, a great deal of the mountaintop removal coal doesn't even stay in the United States.
Really? What, we sell it to China, Europe?
Yes, it gets on a boat and goes. It takes a slow boat to China.
So it just gives money to the coal companies. The other thing I found interesting that Robert Kennedy was pointing out is it actually uses less labor than
it did in your
father's generation.
Right. In the 80s, there were 115,000 coal miners. There are 17,000 now. Of those, less than 5,000, probably less than 4,000 are mountaintop removal jobs.
So what does it take?
Those jobs wouldn't be missed if they were gone.
What does it take to convince your fellow West Virginians that mountaintop removal is not their future? There are movements.
No, we're convincing.
Your movement's one of them.
Mark, we're convincing them. Surveys have shown repeatedly that 60, 70, 80% of West Virginians oppose mountaintop removal.
So when's the next election in West Virginia for state office?
It's going to be between a guy who's for mountaintop removal, who's a Democrat, and a guy who's for mountaintop removal, who's a Republican.
Have you never heard of primaries in West Virginia?
Sure.
And
there'll be two guys who are for mountaintop removal running against each other.
What happens to someone who's against mountaintop removal who runs in a primary?
They're not politicians. They don't make it into office for the most part. There are some. To be fair, there are wonderful, good liberal Democrats, the real kind.
Do you see things changing? I guess is there a political way out of this?
They are changing. The things are changing, Mark. One of the most important parts of that change is something that our organization has been heavily involved in championing, and maybe we can talk about that in the next segment.
We will.
That's the Coal River Wind Project.
The Coal River Wind Project, and also a federal bill, H.R. 1310, to restore the Clean Water Act.
Exactly.
And that's done at the federal level. But it's interesting to me because I think you'd have to do it both at the state level and the federal level. And that's why I guess I'm pushing you on the state thing. When we come back, I also want to talk about our new president, Barack Obama. Both he and John McCain vowed to stop mountaintop removal in the election. We'll ask how he's doing and how perhaps we can help give him a push to do the right thing. If you want to call in, there's still a chance. There's one segment left. 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. We'll be right back after this.
I need a job.
Necesito trabajo.
I would like to speak English better.
Me gustaría hablar inglés mejor.
I want to be a U.S. citizen.
Quisiera ser ciudadano de los Estados Unidos.
For over 35 years.
Por más de 35 años.
The Hispanic Committee of Virginia has been serving our community.
El Comité Hispano de Virginia ha estado sirviendo a nuestra comunidad.
Job training and placement.
Capacitación, ayuda para conseguir trabajo.
Education for children and adults.
Educación para niños y adultos.
Immigration, naturalization, and medical referrals.
Ayuda para los procesos de inmigración y naturalización y orientación sobre médicos
are a small part of what we do.
Son solo una pequeña parte de lo que hacemos.
For help, information, or to volunteer,
para ayuda, información o para ofrecerse como voluntario.
Contact the Hispanic Committee of Virginia.
Comuníquese con el Comité Hispano de Virginia.
Helping everyone participate more fully in American society.
Ayudando a todos a participar plenamente en la sociedad norteamericana.
Did you notice if you were missing half your kidney function? According to the National Kidney Foundation, 20 million people have chronic kidney disease, and 20 million more may be at risk and not even know it. Anyone with high blood pressure, diabetes, or family history of chronic kidney disease is at risk. Early diagnosis is vitally important. To get the whole story, talk to your doctor and visit the National Kidney Foundation at kidney.org or call for a free brochure. Because when it comes to chronic kidney disease, you might not know the half.
Here again, the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Talking about the bombing in Appalachia. No, not done by a foreign power, but by our very own American coal companies. My guest, Bob Kincaid, is the president of the board of directors of Coal River Mountain Watch. And we've talked a lot about West Virginia, and I've been kind of hard on Bob's home state. But he reminds me, this isn't just West Virginia. It's happening in Kentucky, it's happening in Tennessee, and it's happening in Virginia, in southwestern Virginia. So it's a matter for those state governments, as well as the federal government, to deal with. I have a caller from Virginia, Linda from Chantilly. Linda, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Hello.
Hello, you're on the air. Talk to us. What are your comments on mountaintop removal?
Oh, I don't like it, and I don't think it should be done. I feel that anything that the government gets into, it just takes and makes things worse. I had family that has worked in the coal mines, and when they start the company, they have to buy their clothing, their carbide for their lamps and everything, charge them about $500, which they can never pay off.
So they're kind of indebted to the company their whole lives, huh?
Their whole single life. And with the people, they didn't feel that they should leave the company. They had enough integrity and stuff to stay with it. And the houses that the company, took and built, and they had to pay the company for those.
So the company, you know, it's funny, Linda, this reminds me actually of the old book, The Jungle, by Upton Sinclair. He was talking about a meatpacking industry. Mm-hmm. But they did this same kind of sort of union busting type activity where the company owns your house and the company owns your clothes and suddenly the company owns you. It's almost
That's the history of coal. Mark, the lifestyle that Linda is describing, we're talking about people who weren't even paid in American money.
No, they were paid in scrip.
That's right.
Really?
They could not go to another store.
So they had to buy from the company store,
They had to buy
too.
From the company store at inflated prices.
Yes.
Linda, I'm curious, is your family's from Appalachia?
Yes.
West Virginia, Western Virginia, Southwest?
West Virginia.
From West Virginia. What do you think should be done about mountaintop removal? I don't know. Do you know about the bill that we're going to talk about, H.R. 1310, to stop that?
I just heard about it recently, just this year, and I feel it should be stopped. I don't think that it should be allowed.
Well, we're going to talk about ways to stop it. Before I end our call, I just want to know if you have any other specific question for Bob about it.
Well, back then, they tried to break the union.
Right.
And the reason for the unions was for working conditions, better working conditions, because these people were treated horribly. And I know our unions aren't very good. And
well, I think it's a fair question. Why aren't the unions doing better to stop this kind of behavior? Thank you very much for your call, Linda. I really appreciate it. And you and anyone else is welcome to comment further at radioinsidescoop.com. I really appreciate your call, particularly your personal experience. But Linda raises a good point. United Mine Workers, there are unions to deal with coal miners. Why aren't unions are generally the progressive's friend? What's going on here?
My great-grandfather and grandfather struggled to see the United Mine Workers survive in the coal fields of West Virginia, Mark. I would love to see their membership increase. I want to see honorable underground mining. It's possible to be done.
So you're not trying to end all coal production in America?
No, heavens no.
No, just the
work. But mountaintop removal's got to end because, first of all, that's not mining. That's demolition and scraping and extracting. And let me just address something that Linda raised there for a moment. The unions, mountaintop removal is mountaintop removal because they have managed to do it and exclude the unions. There are very, very few union workers on mountaintop removal jobs. There are very few workers on a mountaintop removal job. That photograph that you showed a little bit ago, a demolition crew of 14, 15, 20 people can do that, as long as they've got the monster machinery to do it with.
Yeah, the one that Robert Kennedy talked about was so large that he could actually fly underneath it.
Yeah.
It was 22 stories tall.
Exactly.
Wow. Let me get to the solution, because
yes,
it's easy to talk about the problem.
This is important.
It's very important. Now, first of all, Barack Obama and John McCain both said they were going to stop mountaintop removal. You gave me Obama's exact quote. What was it?
There's got to be a better way of getting coal than blowing the tops off our mountains.
Which makes sense. What has the president said since he's been elected, since he's served in term? What are his people saying? What do you expect from the Obama administration?
I expect the Obama administration to do the right thing. You can't talk hope and change to the rest of the country and leave the tired, old, miserable status quo in Appalachia. You just can't do it. It's wrong. You can't talk about a green economy in the rest of the country and a green jobs revolution in the rest of the country and leave Appalachia the way it is. Unless you green Appalachia first, every other green thing you do in the country is going to have coal's stain upon it. With that having been said, I look to Barack Obama to do the right thing. I respect him, and I think he knows what the right thing to do is, but he's going to need help from Congress, and that's why we're doing what we're doing this week. This is the annual week in Washington. We lobby against mountaintop removal. We go and we visit various and sundry members of the Senate and the House. There is a bill. It's been introduced, Mark. It is H.R. 1310. It's called the Clean Water Protection Act, and it's that rarest of things. It's a two-sentence bill.
It's a two-sentence bill?
Yes.
That is a rare thing in Washington.
Everybody that signs on and co-sponsors it can assure everyone that they have read the bill.
So I assume you know it verbatim then?
No, I do not.
Oh, okay. Well, I was going to pull it up then.
But the essence of it is it returns the full and proper intent of the Clean Water Act to what it was.
In other words, it says that you can't dump the waste
in streams. Right. You can't dump waste in streams, and it redefines that fill, that stuff that they say is just fill, it redefines that as waste. It would end mountaintop removal.
And how are you doing in terms of getting co-sponsors?
I'm proud to say that there are in excess of 125 co-sponsors in the House of Representatives. It was from the date of its introduction, which was only a couple of weeks ago. We are, we believe, on the path toward finding someone to introduce the companion bill in the United States Senate.
I'll tell you, one of the nice things about having worked in Congress is I'm very good at getting bills on a moment's notice. It's actually not that hard to do. If we could show it on the screen, I actually have a copy of H.R. 1310, the Clean Water Protection Act, and it basically defines the Federal Water Pollution Control Act to say, the term fill material means any pollutant which replaces portions of the waters of the United States with dry land, or which changes the bottom elevation of a water body for any purpose. The term does not include any pollutant discharged into the water primarily to dispose of waste. In other words, if you throw something in the river, it's waste.
Right.
Whether or not it's arsenic.
It's elegant, it's simple, and it makes sense.
Particularly when you have 1,200 miles of streams that don't exist anymore.
Absolutely. And so it's very easy for people who want to get active about this. Check. There are lists out there. You can find the list of who's co-sponsored. who hasn't. If your member of Congress has, call them and thank them and tell them that you hope that they will work to get others. If they haven't, call them and tell them you expect them to do so.
And I should note, this isn't necessarily a Democratic-Republican
issue. No, there are Democrats
there are
and Republicans
that are on board this.
Exactly.
If you want to know, by the way, if your member of Congress has co-sponsored this or any other bill, what we always did in Congress when I worked there is we went to congress.gov.
Exactly.
You type in H.R. 1310, lo and behold, you see the text. That's how I found it right now in seconds. And it also tells you who's co-sponsored the bill. Yeah. Let me ask you this. In terms of the streams that are filled up, you were telling me in the break, it's not just that these streams no longer exist, but in the ones that do exist, you found mutations like the Simpsons, the three-eyed fish?
Yeah, anybody who's ever watched the Simpsons has probably seen that little three-eyed fish
right.
in the opening credits.
Right.
That
From
happens. That's real.
Three-eyed fishes?
Yeah.
Fish?
Yeah, and fishes with zigzag spines. This is the effect of selenium leaching into water.
And so that there's realized scientific
really
that really does
yes.
happen.
And guess what? What it does to fish, it's not good for people either.
Yeah, I wouldn't think so. Last thing, and we only got a couple minutes left, Bob, but there's been a war on the television, at least, that we see here mm-hmm. in the Washington area, between those people in the coal industry who talk about clean coal, and they actually show a clip from President Obama talking something about clean coal, and then there's another group called reality.org that says there's no such thing as clean coal.
Right.
Who's right?
Reality.org is, but I'd like to take just a couple of seconds and supplement what Reality.org has said. If every piece of science was brought to bear and what came out of the smokestack from burning coal was so clean you could powder a baby's bottom with it, it still would not change what happens in the extractive process. Unless mountaintop removal is ended, there's no such thing as clean coal. There can never be such a thing as clean coal.
But if you blow up a mountain, it's not in a geodesic dome.
Right.
It goes all over the place.
Clean coal isn't a technology. They just call it that. Clean coal is an advertising slogan, Mark, like tasty cyanide or fat-free lard or...
I get the idea.
Yeah.
Tasty cyanide.
Yum, yum.
Cold. Yum, yum. And the other thing I think to remember is Hiroshima every 9 days.
Yes.
Going on in West Virginia. Well, Bob, I got to tell you, I hope that in West Virginia, Kentucky, in southwestern Virginia, mm-hmm. and Tennessee, that people actually get a spine, get
busy.
There is this terrible poverty, and part of the poverty, as you point out, is not...
It was brought to us, Mark.
It was brought to you. It doesn't have to be in Appalachia. And
Thank you, Mark.
The irony is that getting rid of coal would actually allow Appalachia to become an economically viable place as well as a green, beautiful place.
And take our place next to the rest of our fellow Americans.
Well, I, for one, have visited those majestic mountains. If you haven't been out there, go to some of the Appalachians that still are left before the coal companies destroy them all, and at least see what they're destroying. Bob Kincaid, thank you very much for coming.
Mark Levine, it was a pleasure. Thank you very, very much.
And if you want to know more information, go to RadioInsightsGroup.com. Mark Levine, signing off.